This is a podcast from the BBC. To find out more, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3. Today's edition of Jazz Library comes from the Cheltenham International Jazz Festival, and I'm very pleased to have someone with me whose life has been one of the most interesting voyages in jazz history. A voyage at one stage into a bit of a wilderness and then back again, but also a voyage from a very tonal, organised kind of jazz to something that really lives on the edge. Ladies and gentlemen, give a great Cheltenham welcome to Henry Grimes. Well, now, Henry, going way, way back in your career, you started out playing with some very big names indeed in jazz. And we're going to start today with a group that was one of the best known and most popular bands of the 1950s, which was the Jerry Mulligan Group. How did you start playing with Jerry?
Don't know how I did it or how it was done, but before I knew what was happening, I was knowing, you know, these people, Jerry and Chet Baker, you know, and it's just been fantastic that way. You know, I don't know when how these things happen, but
You were a very young man to be in that band. Of course, you'd taken over for some other very interesting bass players. But one of the things about it was, with no piano, you were carrying a lot of the harmonic business of the band.
Oh, yes, that was a very valuable exercise.
And I guess especially with the new compositions, you were having to get those down very fast.
Yeah.
How did Jerry organise the band? I mean, did he spend a lot of time rehearsing you, or was it something where you were playing together so much that you just picked up things as you went along?
I was sort of auditioned by Jerry, and his way of auditioning is like you're laying on a rug that was made by the man before you, you know, but when the man who's with you comes up to that rug, you know, you all come into something else different.
It was a great metaphor, that one of the rug, and we're going to start this piece listening to you and Dave Bailey weaving a particularly interesting one. The piece is an old standard by Rodgers and Hammerstein, and it's called People Will Say We're in Love. People Will Say We're in Love, from the complete studio recordings of the Jerry Mulligan Quartet. That's out on the Lone Hill label, and the band there, Chet Baker, Jerry Mulligan, Dave Bailey on drums, and my guest, Henry Grimes. Who were the bassists that you listened to as you were coming up to kind of learn the trade?
Well, first, there are a lot of bass players who used to play with Django Reinhardt in his band. He had several, three or four favorites, you know, that was always with him. And others, there was like Jimmy Blanton up to Ray Brown, Oscar Pettiford, a few others like Israel Crosby.
Were there people in Philadelphia that you could go and hear and see how they set up their basses and how they put the instrument together, or did you learn that by trial and error?
I learned that by trial and error, but I used to have communications with them on music to a very extensive degree, you know, of playing music.
Well, the next musician that we're going to hear you with is McCoy Tyner. Now, I wonder, because I know around that same time you were working a lot with Roy Haynes, the drummer. Was it through Roy that you got to play with McCoy, or how did that happen?
I think it was through Roy. I know I went down by the system of the telephone, you know, but on that. But I still don't know who called me first or who called who first, but somebody called me and I got the job.
I mean, it's wonderful to play with McCoy at that time. He was in the Coltrane Quartet, so he was playing regularly with Elvin and Jimmy Garrison. But it always struck me that you and Roy gave quite a different spin to the way that he was playing.
McCoy was favoring me and Roy Haynes. The fact that I'm on that list, it always astounded me what, you know, being a part of a list of that sort, but that's what it was.
Well, I'm not sure when you listen to this that there's any doubt, really, Henry, because we're going to hear your solo from a piece called Blues Back, which is on the album Reaching Forth, and it strikes me that the minute you hear this, there's no doubt why he'd have hired you. Of November 1962. That's Blues Back from McCoy Tyner's album Reaching Forth on the Impulse label. Henry, let's pick up the story now with your relationship with Sonny Rollins, because actually you worked quite a bit with Sonny. I think came to Europe with Sonny and the trio, didn't you?
Yes. He auditioned me from playing with Al Cohn, Zoo Sims, and Lenny Tristano when, you know, so I mean it was all so forthright that I said I have to play with him in Europe. We started in Paris, and that's why I ended up working with them a lot.
Now, a lot of that time, it was just a trio with you, Sonny, and I think Pete LaRocca on drums, wasn't it, a lot of the time?
Yeah.
And did you find that very open setting was a great platform for you to kind of expand your own ideas?
Oh, yeah, but every musician is a supplier of ideas, you know, in that sense. I remember that Kenny Clarke was the person that was with us, you know, on that, the first, and then Pete LaRocca or Pete Sims was there, a little, you know, after that.
Well, Kenny Clarke, of course, another great supplier of ideas.
Yeah, very great.
When you came back to New York, you made an album with Sonny, which had as a guest star one of the great titans of the tenor sax, Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah.
Now, we'll talk in a minute about Hawk, but the other interesting person for me on that album is Paul Blay, and I gather you'd worked a little bit with Paul before actually coming into the studio with him and Sonny.
Yeah, I don't think I worked with him that way, but I did play with him a lot. And there was one situation, I forgot how it got going, but in this one situation we played together, you know, a lot. Somehow I think Paul Blay was organizing a loft to jam and something like that, you know, but that was a few years before that recording was made with Hawkins and Sonny and myself.
And we were talking just a little bit before we started this recording about Paul's extraordinary talent for getting sounds out of a piano that none of us can quite work out how he does it.
Yeah, I'd say he'd bend the notes, he'd grab the notes up and sort of bend them, you know, it's very fantastic guy with his own acoustics, you know.
Well, you can hear that a little bit here. The track we're going to hear is called Just Friends. And I said we'd talk a little bit about Coleman Hawkins. I mean, he was still at that stage in the 60s, somebody who I guess everybody on the New York scene utterly admired, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I was just overwhelmed. I couldn't, you know, it wasn't anything I could do but grab the axe and start playing, you know.
Well, we'll hear his incredibly forceful personality and then Sonny trying to play in a very different way. And I think you get a little sense of what you were talking about with Paul Blay under Sonny's solo when Paul throws some chords at him and you think, wow, where did they come from?
Yeah, Sonny is another one that really plays some bending sound, you know, really, it's fantastic. We'll be right back.
Just the end of Just Friends, and that's from the Sonny Rollins & Co. with Coleman Hawkins album on the Bluebird label, the title All the Things You Are, 1963-4. And the band, Sonny Rollins, Coleman Hawkins, Paul Blay, Roy McCurdy on drums, and my guest, Henry Grimes on bass, recorded on the 18th of July, 1963. Now, that Bluebird album is actually getting quite hard to find, but RCA have at least kept most of their Sonny Rollins in catalogue one way or another, so you can, if you search a little bit, find these tracks with Henry, with Coleman Hawkins and Sonny Rollins. But Henry, we're going to a very different pair of tenor saxophonists now, Albert Eiler and Charles Tyler. You made quite a lot of recordings with Albert, including those fantastic live sessions from the Village Vanguard. But we're actually going to focus on an ESP album called Spirits Rejoice, which I think was a studio album. But it's a chance to hear some of Albert's music laid out in a fairly, I was going to say, approachable way. It's quite a shock after what we've been hearing. It was certainly a shock to those of us in 1965 who didn't quite know what was coming next. But for me, the interesting thing is, you're playing with another bass player, and this is Gary Peacock. How did you work out, with two of you playing in this setting, how you were going to relate to one another?
Well, for me, it was just a matter of being able to adapt, and that's what I would do. There wasn't anything else I could do.
Now, the section we're going to hear from Spirits Rejoice has the two of you both playing with the bow and trying to find new things to say on the instrument. Was this a setting that allowed you to do that?
Yes, because all you have to do is look up, and a few inches away from your face is the wall is music that, you know, that can go, you know, and you hear so much of it, you can just say, well, I'll try to play some of that, and it's because it's all there, you know, laid out for you, you know, and stark avant-garde, you know.
What were Albert and his brother like as people? How did you get to know them well?
Yes, I did get to know them fairly well. When Albert got out of the Army, that's when he became a very fluent and good saxophone player. But before that, he used to play in the Army, you know, and one of the guys that he shied off of would be Sonny Rollins, because we used to travel to certain places where he was, and sometimes we'd jam, but most of the time it was just that Albert, you know, was getting used to knowing Sonny Rollins. So when he got out of the Army, I think he started working wild things out, you know, were very fantastic things, you know.
Well, this is one of them. This is very much Albert's sound world, and it's just a short section of the main title track from Spirits Rejoice. Just part of Spirits Rejoice, the title track of the ESP album, recorded in September 1965. Albert Eiler and Charles Tyler on tenors, Donald Eiler trumpet, Gary Peacock and my guest Henry Grimes on bass, and Sonny Murray on drums. You're listening to Jazz Library on BBC Radio 3, recorded at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. Henry, the catalyst for you changing direction a bit was a meeting you had with Albert and Cecil Taylor.
These musicians were fantastically new, you know. And, you know, I mean, you just have to listen to them to snap right into balance with them, you know.
One of the things, obviously, that stands out for me about that is your interactions with Sonny Murray, because there's somebody who's, I think, in many ways, a great percussion colorist.
Yeah, that's true. He influences you, you know, whether you want to be influenced or not. He has a very boss attitude, but, I can forgive him for that because the music always came out.
Well, I mentioned a minute ago Cecil Taylor, And we couldn't let this part of the program go by without hearing an example of you and Cecil working together that period. The album Conquistador is two huge sides originally. The CD has a third alternative of one of them, but the main track is 19 minutes or so long. And it just evolves, doesn't it, Henry, during that time?
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, I think it's more true for people who don't understand that kind of music than it is for people who do. Oh, the other matter about that music is rhythmically, it's arrhythmic. And, you know, that's in all of music, that's very rare kind of a thing that happened. But an arrhythmic texture of music is just something that, especially Sonny Murray, because he's a drummer, and the rest of them, you know, Albert Arlo and his brother, all also doing something to the rhythm, you know, and not caring what the power of abstract leanings can do for, you know.
I guess the thing about Conquistador is that you're working with, in fact, the drummer you'll be playing with here at Cheltenham, Andrew Cyril, and the two of you manage in an arrhythmic setting to sound pretty rhythmic to me.
Yeah, that's when it's becoming music, you know, I think. It's just fantastic. I mean, yeah, you can hear all kinds of ways and things about it. You can make up your own things about it and still be right, you know, so.
Well, let's hear just the opening of that very long title track, Conquistador. The opening section of Conquistador, that's on Blue Note, and the current edition, as I said, includes some alternate material not on the original LP issue. It was recorded in October 1966. Bill Dixon on trumpet, Jimmy Lyons alto, Cecil Taylor piano, Henry Grimes and Alan Silver on basses, and Andrew Cyril on drums. I was fascinated by what you were saying, Henry, about the change in the rhythmic language, because the last track we're going to hear from, as it were, that early period of your career is with Don Cherry. It's a piece called Awake New, and in fact seems to me to have that very interesting rhythmic knife edge that the Ornette bands had of playing time and yet not quite time, partly because Ed Blackwell is on drums. And once Don brought him into his quartet with the very interesting figure of Ferris Sanders, he never quite lost that Ornette rhythmic feel, but it's much looser. Would you go along with that?
Definitely so. It's just like in a sense of ordering your senses to understand what you're listening to.
You make three albums with Don for Blue Note, and for my money, this one, which is called Where Is Brooklyn, is the most interesting, possibly because it is just a quartet, and you can feel the four of you interacting perhaps at an even deeper level than on the others. Mm. I don't know if that's your favourite of the three, but
it is. All these records that you're playing is my favourite records.
So. So let's hear the opening section of Awake New. This is Don Cherry with Ferris Sanders, Henry Grimes and Ed Blackwell in November 1966. We'll be right back.
fantastic.
It's Pharaoh really sailing there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
We're coming to the point, Henry, where you began what is one of the longest layoffs from playing music in jazz history. I mean, just over 30 years. So, very briefly, I mean, what was the story? What happened? How did you end up not playing for so long?
The economics of everything was just a little too hard for me there one time, so I got out of it and left the city of New York before anybody could know. I meant to get back in, but it was just something that happened that I didn't get back in until about 35 years or more.
Of course, you sold your bass, didn't you, quite early on in that rather desperate period for you?
Yeah. It was very desperate, but what I did to ease some of it down was to not play music.
I think we should say that one of the things that you did too, being the sort of creative fellow that you are, is that you started writing poetry, and very good poetry it is too.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I did.
How did you set about tackling the instrument again? Because, I mean, it's a tough thing. I know people say it's like riding a bike and you don't forget it, but is it that easy to pick up the instrument again and start playing it?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, you have to be very sincere and work, you know, at it. It just took me 1 or 2 months to get back in shape. As soon as I did, I was getting phone calls and people, you know, knowing what was happening.
One of the first albums that you made, Henry, after you came back to playing again, was with the guitarist Mark Rebo. And on that album, the young trumpeter Roy Campbell Jr. and from the Chicago Underground Trio, Chad Taylor on drums. Mm-hmm. The band's and the album's called Spiritual Unity. And I guess that's partly looking back a bit at the music that you'd made a long time earlier with Albert.
Yeah, it was Albert's music, in fact. My wife gave me this incentive to talk to certain musicians over the phone, so she got Mark Rebo to come up and talk to me because he was saying that he remembers me when he was young in age. The thing is that it's just a fantastic way of being a part of evolution.
Well, let's listen to this album, which was made in 2004, and we're going to hear an Albert track called Bells. Just part of Bells from the album Spiritual Unity on the Pi label. Roy Campbell, Mark Rebo, Chad Taylor, and my Jazz Library guest here in Cheltenham, Henry Grimes, and that was recorded just 5 years ago. Well, Henry, one great partnership. We've talked about many, many wonderful drummers that you've worked with over the years, but I think there's a particularly special relationship between you and Rashid Ali.
Yes, there is. Aside from we both came from the same city, Philadelphia, there's very tight associated musical relationship there.
When the two of you get on stage to work together just as a duo, is it something that you can do with absolutely no planning beforehand, or do you find that you talk a little about what you're going to do, or is it just that you are so in tune with one another that you can play really with no degree of preparation?
Yeah, that's what we have, that power to do that, when we know that we can just come together anytime and start playing, you know.
Now, we talked a bit about Sonny Murray being somebody who can create percussion landscapes, but it seems to me that Rashid is one of those extraordinary talents who can create complete sort of colour palettes on the kit. I mean, he's the most extraordinary drummer in terms of the fact that a lot of what he's doing sounds almost tonal. It's so brilliantly created on the drum kit.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
Well, let's hear the two of you doing this just 2 years ago. This is an album called Going to the Ritual on the Porter label, and the track called This Must Have Always Happened. Just part of the duo between Henry Grimes and Rashid Ali, This Must Have Always Happened, from the album Going to the Ritual on the Porter label. That word ritual, Henry, it pops up a lot in descriptions of Albert's music, that there is a ritual quality to it. And I noticed that it's the title of this one. I mean, does the word have a significance in, as it were, your philosophical approach to music?
Philosophical extension and all kinds of things. Music's sort of a first, but not entirely first, because there are other things. But I was going to say that I had to be very careful about talking about Rashid, because there are things that he just knows how to do with these drums. I mean, it's just fantastically...
unusually creative would be it.
Yeah, very unusually creative.
Well, we're going to pare things right down now and listen to something that you've been doing more and more over the years, which is playing entirely solo. And there's an album that came out last year, which is just called Henry Grimes Solo, a double album. So it's a pretty intense, long concert of you playing. And I said at the very beginning of this programme that your life and your music's been a journey. And it seems to me that a Henry Grimes solo concert is a journey as well. I mean, you seem to set out... Do you have a map in your head when you start, or do you really just wander?
It's like a story that has the map on it, you know. So if I want to make it a map, there's a map down there, you know. That's what I'm associated to, something down there, you know. But if not, something somewhere else. That thing that make you have love for who you're playing with and what you're playing.
Well, let's hear just the beginning of this double album. So that's Henry Grimes playing solo in Brooklyn last year and recorded by the ILK label. The album's called Henry Grimes Solo, and it's recorded, as I say, in March. Now, Henry, we're almost at the end of this survey of just some of your very illustrious recording career. And I was very pleased earlier on when you said that they were all your favourite records. I hope we've stuck to that for the last part of the programme.
This stuff is very strong. You know, just... walk off of it, you know, very easily. It's very strong, very strong.
Well, we're going to finish with just a little excerpt of music from the band that you're playing with here in Cheltenham, and which has also appeared recently on Jazz on 3, and that's the Profound Sound Trio. The album's going to come out, in fact, next month. It's called Opus de Life, but I was delighted to find an example on it, Henry, of you playing... your new instrument, the violin. Now, when did you pick up the violin?
Well, that was my first instrument when I was about 12 years old. I took it up, and when I started, I entered the school, And then by the time I was finished with this school, I was about 16, and I went to the bass.
So the bass then became the main thing, and you've only come back to the violin relatively recently.
Yes.
And did you find it a stretch to sort of get your hands, because it's a very different physical position.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I have to recognize what you mean, because that's muscular, you know. Your concentration has to be steady, you know, all the time.
Well, it's probably a very good example of you overcoming that muscular problem and indeed demonstrating just how great the violin is. You can hear it from the audience reaction on this track, which is called Futurity. It's on the Profound Sound Trio album, Opus de Life, on the Porter label. It's out next month. But now, a very big Cheltenham thank you to my guest, Henry Grimes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
That was a Jazz Library podcast, and you can hear Jazz Library on Saturdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on BBC Radio 3.